Okay, welcome. This is where we're at. We're in this, in chapter 6, which so far has been mostly about the way in which the Pesach sacrifice interacts with Shabbat, which will continue to be the main focus of our discussion. And we had this extremely long Mishnah 2 with the back and forth between Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, and Rabbi Akiva, with all of the logical arguments flying back and forth. So then we continue to move on to other topics in the difference between when Pesach falls on Shabbat. So I just wanted to Mishnah 4. We ended with Mishnah 3, which just sort of introduced this Chagiga sacrifice, this additional sacrifice, which then is the topic also of Mishnah 4. So I just want to go over Mishnah 3 briefly, so we're back in the right zone here. Mishnah 3, Ematai mevi chagiga imo. When does one bring the chagiga with it, with the Pesach sacrifice? Chagiga being an additional sacrifice you can bring on the Shlosh Regalim. Bizman shehu ba b'chol b'tahara uvimuat. The conditions are when Pesach falls on Chol, not on Shabbat, when the community is pure, in other words, Pesach is essentially happening, and when you're worried that there's not enough meat on the bones on the Pesach lamb to feed everyone who registered for it, so you want to make sure you're satiated with a mitzvah meal. Uvizman shehu ba b'shabbat b'mrubeh uvimtumah ein mevi'in imo chagiga. And the flip side of those rules are always true, that if the 14th falls on Shabbat, or if there's enough food from the Pesach lamb, or the community is in impurity, then they do not bring the Chagiga. Okay. And the Chagiga, again, was this same kind of Shlamim sacrifice, which was shared by the priests and the people who brought it. Okay, so that's back to Chagiga. Now, continuing on. Chagiga haitava min hatzon, min habakar, min hakvasim, umin haizim, min hazacharim, umin hanakevot. The Chagiga, so that the Pesach sacrifice has to be from a goat or a lamb, it has to be a male, and it has to be a young animal. The Chagiga, none of those things seems to apply. It can be from sheep or cattle or from poor goats. So tzon and bakar is sort of like small animals and large animals. So it's like the flocks is the smaller animals and the bakar, the cattle, is the larger animals. And then it clarifies either goats or sheep from Zacharim, from males or females. And you can have the Pesach can only be eaten on the day of on the night of the 15th. That's your only time to eat it. You have to finish eating it by midnight. If you don't finish it by midnight, then you can't eat it anymore. As opposed to the normal rule for a Shlamim sacrifice, which is that it's 2 days, you get 2 days and one night to finish it. So, yeah, so basically this is just trying to say that the Shlamim, the Chagiga, acts like a normal Shlamim. It doesn't follow the unusual aspects of the Pesach sacrifice. Things like it has to be male, has to be a small animal, and has to be eaten that night. It follows the normal rule of Shlamim in that way. So this basically just comes along for the ride once we're talking about the Chagiga and how it interacts with Shabbat. And now we have another mission sort of clarifying differences between the Chagiga and the Pesach here. Is there any significance to the lack of symmetry in the Mishnah? The last two divisions aren't parallel. Oh, you mean because they're out of order? It should be Bachol b'tahara uv'mu'at. It should be therefore b'shabbat b'tum'ah uv'merubeh. Yeah, it's hard to know. You'd have to look at a bunch of places where it's quoted, and you might find that it gets moved around a bit. It's hard to know, especially in an oral text, where as long as the list is there, the order doesn't necessarily matter. Hard to know. Okay, now we move on to another big Kal v'chomer Mishnah. I warned you this was coming up. So now this goes back to the topic. If you remember, there was a topic back in the fifth chapter, which was about what conditions made the Pesach sacrifice valid or invalid. And one of the major conditions was you have to have the right intention throughout. And there was also a secondary concern of would you have transgressed a negative prohibition if you did it incorrectly? And the definition for when it was incorrect, this is Mishnah 5:2, if you go back, the definition for when you would be liable for lashes in that case is if the sacrifice would have otherwise been valid, then you would get lashes. If the sacrifice would have otherwise been invalid, you would not get lashes. So this sort of piggybacks off that similar concern. And now we're talking about if you sacrifice the Pesach, Shabbat Pesach has a special dispensation for Shabbat, that you're allowed to sacrifice the Pesach on Shabbat. But what if you sacrifice the Pesach on Shabbat, but you didn't have the right intention? You thought it was a normal Shlamim sacrifice, so you thought it was the Chagigah or something like that. So that's the question. Would you be liable for breaking Shabbat because you did a sacrifice that was not allowed on Shabbat or not? Right? That's the question of this Mishnah. HaPesach sheshchato shelo lishmo b'Shabbat chayav alav chatat. A Pesach sacrifice which he slaughtered without the proper intention on Shabbat, he would be liable a sin offering. That would be the normal penalty for violating Shabbat unintentionally. You'd have to bring a sin offering in the future. This is this week's parsha. You'll see, read all about the chatat, the sin offering. Yeah, obviously, if you violated Shabbat intentionally, that would be a death penalty offense. Unintentionally, just a sacrifice. Easy. So yeah, so the point is that the shelo lishmo b'Shabbat. Here is the question is, the Pesach is not valid. So you have taken yourself out of the normal dispensation to allow you to sacrifice a Pesach on Shabbat because you had the wrong intention. Therefore, you would be liable for breaking Shabbat because the Pesach itself was not valid. And you'll see as this goes through that the validity of the sacrifice is a major question as to whether you would be liable for Shabbat, for violating Shabbat or not. Okay? U'sha'ar kol hazvachim sheshchatan l'shum Pesach im einan ru'yin chayav. Okay, let's wait for that for a second. Any other sacrifices that they sacrifice them for this in the name of a Pesach? They thought it was a Pesach offering, but actually it was just a Shlamim or a Chagigah or something like that. Im einan ru'yin, if they were not appropriate to be a Pesach sacrifice, in other words, if it were not a sheep or a goat, or if it were a female sheep or goat, then that's another interesting question. Because then it would never have been valid as a Pesach sacrifice. So there's no special dispensation to offer it, and therefore you would be liable for breaking Shabbat in that circumstance. Because you made a massive mistake. You looked at a cow and said it was Pesach. Like, that's totally impossible. A cow can't be a Pesach. So therefore you are liable. You're not within the rubric of sacrificing permitted things on Shabbat for the Pesach. You're outside of it, and therefore you're liable. But in ruin hain, what happens if it's actually a male goat or a lamb? It would have been a personal valid Pesach sacrifice if it were brought as the Pesach sacrifice. It just happened to be a shlamim or a chagiga. What do you do then? Then there's a disagreement. Rabbi Eliezer, our same characters from before, Rabbi Eliezer mechayev chatat. Rabbi Eliezer would make that person liable for a sin offering, but Rabbi Yeshua poter, and Rabbi Yeshua would not. Seems like Rabbi Yeshua thinks that if it could have been a Pesach sacrifice, then that's okay. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda thinks it doesn't matter whether it could have been a Pesach sacrifice or not. At the end of the day, they did it for the wrong intention. It was actually a shlamim, and therefore you would be liable to bring Shabbat. You don't get the special station sacrifice on Shabbat. Okay, so that's the core arguments. And now Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehuda will have a back and forth about it, similar to what we saw in the Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Mai Pesach shehu mutar shmo kesheshina et shmo chayav zvachin shehein asuran lishman. So typical to form that we saw above, Rabbi Eliezer is going to bring a kal vachomer to prove that he's right. His kal vachomer is that just as the Pesach is permitted. A Pesach, which would be permitted if you did it with the right intention, when you change its name, in other words, you end up sacrificing it for the wrong reason, you would be liable for breaking Shabbat. So too with other sacrifices that actually are not, it's not required for them to have the right name. If you did a shlamim and you accidentally thought it was a chatat, it would actually be a valid shlamim. That's not a problem. So therefore, when you change its name, shouldn't you also be chayav? In other words, he is going back to this earlier split between the Pesach and the Sha'ar Kol HaZvachim in the first line of the Mishnah. He says, this doesn't make any sense, Rabbi Yeshua. The Pesach in the whole sacrifice is invalid. But the Shlamim, when you do if you do the sacrifice with the wrong intention, it would be a valid Shlamim. So it seems like the Pesach is a case. So surely the rule should be just as strict with regard to the Shlamim as it was with the liable for breaking Shabbat or not. Okay, that makes sense to everybody? So he tries to give him a Kal Vachomer to prove that he is right. Logically, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yosef says my position. But as we saw, the game is then all you have to do is sort of prove an exception to the rule into breaking Kal Vachomer. So we're going to try and work out what on that. Amar law, or some way in which those two things you made similar, the Kal and the Chomer, are actually not similar. Amar law, Rabbi Yeshua, lo, that's not true. So Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you can't do that because ima marta b'fesach sheshinu ledvar asur tomar bezvachim sheshinan ledvar hamutar. These two cases are totally different. When you did the Pesach and you changed the name of it, you changed you had the wrong intention. What you did it is you changed the intention to something forbidden, a shlamim sacrifice, which is forbidden to do on Shabbat. So you had the intention of something forbidden as opposed to the intention of something permitted. But if you started off with a shlamim and you thought that it was a Pesach, you did something that was supposedly forbidden, but ended up being permitted because you had the intention of doing something permitted. So what he's saying is these two cases are different. In one situation, you had the intention of doing something permitted. And the other situation, you had the intention of doing something forbidden. That's why the law splits here. Okay. Your parallelism between the Kal and the Chomer doesn't work. Rabbi Eliezer has a rejoinder. Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer, emurei tzibor yochichu. The facts of the public offerings will prove that what I'm saying is true. Shehein mutarin lishman v'hashochet lishman chayav. Because that's a case of something which is permitted if you did it for its own sake on Shabbat, for its own, with the right intention. It would be permitted to do your public offerings because you have to do the daily tamids in the morning and the afternoon. So that would be totally permitted. Great. The public offerings are correct, but the basic structure of the Mishnah is okay, even if you get lost in the particulars of the logic, and even if I'm getting lost in the particulars of the logic. Okay, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, he says, the fats of the public offerings will prove it. They are totally permitted to do it with the right intention, but nonetheless, one who slaughtered something else, slaughtered like a random other sacrifice, with the intention of doing it as a public sacrifice, that person would be liable for breaking Shabbat. So he's saying that this doesn't, your rule, Rabbi Yeshua, doesn't hold. You said that when you change, the difference is between when your intention was something permitted or when your intention was something forbidden. Here is a case where your intention was to do something permitted. Your intention was to do a public offering, which is totally permitted on Shabbat, but it turned out to be some other offering, like a shlamim or something like that. So Rabbi Yeshua, your logic doesn't hold. Fine. Rabbi Yeshua gets the final word. Amar lo Rabbi Yeshua, lo. Im amarta be'emurei tzibur sheyesh lahen kitzba, tomar be'pesach she'ein lo kitzba. This phrase, by the way, im amarta tomar, this structure, is always used to break a Kal Vachomer argument. So it's similar to the kind of yochichu that we saw, yochiach that we saw above. This is the way that Tanaim talk about breaking Kal Vachomer. It would be like, can you say, you can say this, but can you say that? Your logic doesn't hold up. So he says, Rabbi Eliezer, your logic doesn't work. That's not an exception to the rule because the public offerings have a fixed number, a kitzbah. You do exactly three of them on Shabbat. You also do a musaf offering. You do the tamid in the morning, you do the musaf, and then you do the tamid in the afternoon. That's a set number of offerings. You're not worried about like doing them for the wrong intention. It's totally different calculus, as opposed to the Pesach, where people are bringing any number of Pesachim. There's tons of them, hundreds of them, and you might easily get confused. So that's why the concerns are different. Like, what are you doing if you're doing a fourth public offering on Shabbat? Like, you know how many public offerings there are. Like, you never have that intention in the first place. So therefore, that person would be liable, but the person doing Pesach would be... but the Pesach thing you might be off the hook because it's easier to confuse it. It's more inadvertent. Basically, like,
it seems like a lot of the rubrics here about whether you would be liable for breaking Shabbat or not is like, how obvious a mistake is it? If it's like so blatantly obvious, like you can't, there are only three offerings and you added a fourth, that's one thing. If you were sacrificing hundreds of Pesachs and you got one confused, that's another thing. So that's definitely part of the calculus here. Okay, how does one confuse these things anyway? Well, you have to have the right intention. So you're like, you're tired, you've got a long day of sacrificing lambs and you're just like, you know, you're about to do a chagigah and then you go back to do a Pesach, but you accidentally think it's a chagigah. It's like, it seems pretty likely to me. I'm worried, I'd be confused if I were a priest. So that's the argument. It seems like Rabbi Yeshua wins the argument, but the Mishnah adds a final word, which is in support of Rabbi Eliezer, which is that Rabbi Meir Omer, af hashochek l'shem emori tzibur patur. Actually, that case that that Rabbi Eliezer said here, which is that the well, that's sort of, you'll see, it's sort of in support of Rabbi Eliezer, sort of. Okay, well, let's play it out. This case here, where it said that if you did another animal for this with the intention of another sacrifice, with the intention of fulfilling your public offerings, that you would then be liable. He disagrees with that rule. Actually, he thinks that if you did like a shlamim and you had the intention of making it a public offering, you would actually even be patur in that case. You would even be exempt from breaking Shabbat in that case. Okay, which breaks Rabbi Yeshua's rejoinder here. It breaks his response because now these two things are totally parallel. The Pesach and the public offerings are totally parallel, and the fact that one of them has a fixed limit and the other one doesn't is actually irrelevant to the law. In the end, both of them are exempt if you break Shabbat. So it breaks the argument, but I guess he goes mostly in support of Rabbi Yeshua. But nonetheless, in case you're wondering, the halakha does not follow Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Meir. It just follows Rabbi Yeshua. Now, going back to a previous version of this discussion in chapter 5, we also talked about, okay, fine, there's one thing if you sacrificed the Pesach with the wrong intention. But there's another thing, which is if you sacrifice the Pesach for the wrong people or for people who are unable to eat it. So now we're getting back to that question with regards to Shabbat. Would you be liable for breaking Shabbat if you sacrifice it for the wrong people? And that's what we're going to get to here. Shechator shelo la'ochla v'shelo l'nuyav la'arilin v'litzmein chayav. If you sacrifice that for the for people who can't eat it, maybe they're in some way too old to eat enough or something like that. They can't eat enough for whatever reason, maybe they're sick or something like that. Or people who are not registered for it, not part of the minyan, or for people who are uncircumcised or people who are impure, both of whom are unable to eat the Pesach. If you did that, you would be liable for breaking Shabbat. You did a sacrifice that was not valid, and therefore you would be liable for breaking Shabbat for doing it because you're not in the permitted area of allowing to do Pesach on Shabbat. But if you had a mix-up and you slaughtered it, lo'ochlav v'shelo lo'ochlav, limnuyav v'shelo limnuyav, lemulin v'la'arilin, l'toharim v'litmeim, patur. If you did it for a group of people, some of which can eat it, some of which can't eat it. So either like some of them are able to eat it, some of them are not able to eat it, or some of them who are registered, some of them who are not registered, or some of them are circumcised, some of them are uncircumcised, some of them are pure, some of them impure, then you didn't break Shabbat. You had a valid Pesach offering, therefore you're not liable for breaking Shabbat in that moment. You were allowed to do that sacrifice. Similarly, shchato v'nimsa ba'almum chayav. If you slaughtered it and it turned out that it had a visible injury, the animal had a visible injury, which would make it an invalid sacrifice, you would be liable for breaking Shabbat because you did an invalid Pesach, so you're not allowed to have done that. But shchato v'nimsa treifa ba'seter patur. But if you slaughtered it and it turned out that there was it was invalid, but in a hidden place, maybe inside or somewhere where there was no way to tell until you slaughtered it, then you would be patur. You would be exempt from breaking Shabbat. In other words, like the baal, the mum, the injury on the outside, you could have seen it. You could have just looked at it and noticed that. If you didn't notice that, that's your negligence. As opposed to you killed it and found an injury you never would have found, then obviously that's, you know, nothing you can do about that. Not going to penalize you for it. Okay, Shechato v'noda shemashku habalim et yadam, o shemetu o shenitma'u patur v'pnei shechat birshut. Another situation, this sounds pretty terrifying. You slaughtered the animal and then you found out that the ba'alim had, the owners of the animal had withdrawn their hands. In other words, they had changed their minds. They'd relinquished ownership of the Pesach. Or they died, or they became impure in the meantime. So in other words, it was originally when you did the sacrifice, it was for a group of people who could have eaten it. But then it turns out now that they can't for whatever reasons, because they changed their mind or because they died or because they became impure. Now, don't worry about that case. In that case, you would be patur for breaking Shabbat. You'd be exempt because in the end of the day, when you started off the process, you had permission. Everything was well set. Like, it's not your problem if they change their minds halfway through the sacrifice. Okay, do I know the maximum number of people who could register for Pesach? Someone has to keep track of everybody's status. So yeah, I don't think there's particularly a maximum number except for the fact that there needs to be enough of the Pesach for everyone who's registered for it. So there has to be ideally like an olive's worth. In fact, there has to be a minimum of an olive's worth for a volume of an olive for each person who registered for the Pesach. So that's your maximum number, depending on the size of the lamb. And we talked about that the lamb might be too small to feed to like get everyone to satiation, in which case you could bring a chagigah as well and then have a nice festive meal. How is a priest supposed to know exactly who is going to eat each Pesach offering? I think the point is that the person brings a sacrifice to them, the owner or the representative of the group or whatever, or the whole group maybe, brings the offering to the priest, and then the priest and tells them who the priest, who they should be sacrificing it for. She's like, oh, it's for me and my wife and this person. So basically the point of being registered for the sacrifice is that everyone has, like the Torah talks about, implies you have to own your Pesach. But you can, but the Torah does talk about, even in Egypt, they all congregated in each other's houses to eat it. So it sounds like there's some process by which a group of people can gain ownership over it. That group is this minyan, this registration sort of thing. And basically it's just like you get a group of people together. It's basically your invites to the Seder. In a normal year, you get a group of people together. You all know that you're planning on eating Seder together. You're having the Pesach together. You like go all in on this lamb or goat, and you all have in mind that you have a part of it. And then when you go to the temple, the priest will sacrifice it for those people. Okay. Oh, by the way, I did want to say one other thing about the Chagiga, which is that the shank bone represents the Pesach offering. On our Seder plates. It's just like one bone of a lamb. But the Chagigah is also represented on our Seder plates as the egg, most commonly. The burnt egg is normally there in place of the Chagigah offering that they could have brought to the temple. Okay. Thank you, everyone.